If you are looking for a way to spruce up your yard and you don't know a lot about plants, but you need help figuring out the best trees, the best bushes, the best flowers, the best plants for your yard, we have the answer for you. It's fastgrowingtrees.com/chicks. It's the biggest online nursery in the world. And they have helped people like us who literally kill everything.
I do. I kill everything.
I mean, everything, right?
Except for the trees that I get from Fast Growing Trees. Like, you guys, it's unbelievable. So I got these two rose bushes from them. I don't know what they're called. I think they're called You Can't Kill Me rose bushes. Right, I think that's what their species and their genus is. And so they sent them to my house. You guys, I've had these things for what, like 7 months now?
And at least, I don't
do anything to them. I don't understand it, but they're still alive. I don't know, like, I can't, it defies logic. I don't know. They're beautiful too. Gorgeous.
Absolutely. Well, and that's gorgeous. The thing is, everything that you get from fastgrowingtrees.com/chicks, it's by your geographical area, wherever you happen to be in the country, mm-hmm. you're going to be assigned a zone. And then you'll know what zones of plants, flowers, trees, et cetera, you should be looking at that are going to thrive in your climate. And so it makes it so easy, because then you can see pictures of what everything is going to look like. They send it to you. Everything, all the instructions for how to plant, whatever it is that you've ordered, are super easy to follow. I planted a lilac tree. And if you know me, you know what a feat that is.
Yeah, that's so, a big deal. That's a big
deal. It's fantastic. You should check mm-hmm. it out. It's fastgrowingtrees.com/chicks. You can get 15% off your entire order when you use that link, fastgrowingtrees.com/chicks.
I work with college students a lot. And one thing that I see now more than ever, and this was true of me as well, is people going into college and emerging more conservative because you have this exposure. I do like what Ron DeSantis is doing. I, you know, like what some other folks are doing. I really like what Marco Rubio is doing. But I don't, like, at the same time, can they be sort of the wrecking ball that Washington needs?
Welcome to another deep dive edition of the Chicks on the Right podcast. We have a special guest with us today, and it's Emily Jashinsky from The Federalist, writer, culture editor at The Federalist, and also podcast host of The Federalist Hour, and also so many other things that, like, it's making me feel inadequate. So one of the very first things that we wanted to ask you about, Emily, is just to introduce yourself to our audience and let us know, like, how you got started, because you're a young thing and you've accomplished so much already. So tell us about your entrance into this world of politics and what you're doing today and about your new show.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. It was a pleasure to have you on Federalist Radio Hour last week, it was last month already. I can't keep mm-hmm. track of time. I grew up in Wisconsin. I went to school at George Washington University, so I've been in DC for a while now. And I guess just got involved in politics by, you know, it was a pretty liberal campus. So got involved with Young America's Foundation when I was a student there. Then I was their spokesperson after I graduated and stayed in DC and wanted to be a writer. So went to the Washington Examiner, then went from the Examiner to the Federalist, and have been doing sort of politics and cultural coverage for the last several years, and hosting Federalist Radio Hour. So basically just growing up in Wisconsin, I was incredibly frustrated. I know I've talked to you guys on Federalist Radio Hour about the kind of Obama era. And that's sort of, I was, not to make myself sound too young, but I was in high school during the Obama administration.
Oh my gosh.
But for me, it was this sense of the sort of cultural contempt that people in Washington and Hollywood and New York City seemed to have for people like my family, you know, people who went to church every Sunday and owned guns and hunted and fished and listened to country music and all that good stuff. Just the sense of elitism I found very, I think animating might be the right word. That's what I really wanted to do something about. And that's sort of why my interests fluctuate between politics and pop culture and everywhere that they intersect. So that's really what got me involved.
You know, okay. I was just going to say, bravo for making it through college unscathed, because I know there are a lot of, I say kids, because at the time you were a kid, now obviously you're not, but we've heard of so many young people that have gone to universities and they have been in similar situations as you. They were conservative. They were raised in conservative families. They had strong ideals, strong sense of self. And then they get into the university system and they don't make it out conservative. So, I mean, so bravo for doing that. I mean, I'm sure that you probably saw a lot of people your age that did not make it out unscathed.
You know, one thing I see, because I still work with a lot of young people, I'm also the director of the National Journalism Center, which YAF operates. And so I work with college students a lot. And one thing that I see now more than ever, and this was true of me as well, is people going into college and emerging more conservative because you have this exposure. If you're somebody who's kind of curious and is in the center maybe or center right, you are exposed to the worst of the left. The absolute height of their intolerance, the absolute height of their like total disinterest in hearing any other side of the argument. So the lack of coherence that an ideology takes on when it's not challenged, and you end up becoming more and more conservative. And that was definitely my case. It was pretty difficult. I mean, we got into a couple of like national media controversies because the left on our campus wanted to ban us and get us suspended because we didn't want to do mandatory pronoun training and whatever else. But so it was like, you know, it wasn't easy, but I definitely had the experience that I see more kids, especially post-Trump, more of the ones that are coming out post-Trump, they have seen the worst of the left and they become more conservative in college, which honestly is pretty fun to watch.
It is.
Well, that's super hopeful, right?
It makes me feel
so hopeful.
Right. Because Mary has a son that's going to be going to college very soon. And I have I have three kids, two that are out of college and on their own, but then one who's 12. So it gives me a lot of hope. Yeah, because we both worry about that tremendously.
Uh-huh. It should. I mean, it's a really bad look for the left on campus now. They look like just losers. It's so lame to need to enforce absolutely every pillar of leftism that doesn't make any sense anyway. So I guess in a sense, it is hopeful.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. It really is.
Truly.
So one of the things, because like I said in the beginning, is that you're busy. I mean, like there's a lot of things that you're doing. You're, director of that and leader of this and host of that and another host of this. And now you have a brand new show, right? So it's been a couple weeks now that it's been on Counterpoints. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's super interesting. My friend Ryan Grimm, who's DC bureau chief of The Intercept and just a full-blown socialist, and I have hosted a show. We started our friends, Sagar and Jetty and Crystal Ball. They used to host Rising that The Hill had on weekday mornings. And so when they left to create their new thing called Breaking Points, which has been extremely successful, Ryan and I sort of subbed in while they were looking for other hosts because neither of us could do the job full-time. Then we got our own little thing called Rising Fridays that we had been doing since May. And when Sagar and Crystal asked us to come to Breaking Points, which is just a super, super interesting project. They've been really successful. They're a top podcast. They have a huge YouTube channel, almost up to 1 million subscribers. We were really excited about that. So what we do every Friday morning now is a full show where Ryan and I cover the news of the week from two perspectives. You know, you get the sort of right perspective and you get the left perspective. And we think that's the best way for audiences to see the contrast and make up their minds for themselves. You know, hopefully you're hearing the best argument from the right and the best argument from the left. Hopefully that's the ideal conversation. And maybe there isn't a good argument to be made on the right or the left, and people can see that too on any given story. And we just believe that audiences are, we're journalists, but we believe that the audience is just like us. You know, they want to make up their mind for themselves. And so hopefully we can help people work through that.
That's like a he said, she said.
Uh-huh. I mean,
but of the nth degree. So, I mean, have you gotten into fights? Do you expect to get into fights? And have you changed each other's minds on anything yet?
That's a great, yeah.
That's a really good question. So we've definitely gotten into heated exchanges is what I would say. But we, it's always one of the good things about our working a dynamic is that we're both really curious always for what the other thinks about something. And so it's genuinely, I would say it's like having a conversation with your really good friend who disagrees with you on pretty much everything over a couple of beers. It's like totally good natured and just curious and just talking. But it's in this sort of more formalized newsy context, you know, so we are talking about the news of the week and we are in a studio, wearing mics and with lights and makeup. But we try to be, you know, much more sort of open-ended, with our conversations than typical, you know, news media. And nobody is having, I think, conversations that are that open-ended in a formal news studio. That's the goal. And I definitely change my mind all the time, based on Ryan's reporting. He's one of the best reporters I've ever met. He does like really, really good shoe leather stuff over at The Intercept. And maybe he's changed his mind. I don't know. I haven't actually asked him that before, but we were live on air when the Dobbs decision came down, over at we were still at the Hill then. And that was pretty incredible, because we couldn't disagree more on a topic. Wow. And it was really something.
That is so fascinating. Cause honestly, that's the way, you know, again, I'm going to age us, but that's the way that we used to do things in this country. We used to talk to each other like that. We used to have lively discussions over beers. And, you know, when we were in college, this is how we used to do it. We used to talk because I had friends who were crazy liberals. And we used to talk about stuff like this and then we'd still be friends, you know, and now. And I feel like we've lost the ability to do that. So it is really fascinating that you have a show that's basically, you know, it's based on that premise. Like you, this is what you're doing. And so perhaps you're going to inspire people to start doing that again.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. I mean, the thing is, the one thing that makes it possible is respect. And that's what you're saying is what's totally gone in politics. It's that, and I think a lot of it comes, honestly, a lot of it comes from the left because they've expanded the definitions of bigotry and of violence and, you know, character, all of these different things that counts as somebody's character to include mere political disagreements. And I think when you could come to the table with somebody and say, I may think that your policy preference leads to bigotry, but I do not think that's your intention. And I don't think you agree that that's the outcome. Thus, I don't think you are a bad person or you are a bigot. That I think is the key to just coming to the table and respecting the other person's character, respecting that they genuinely want the best for the country and for the people of the country. At the end of the day, if you can do that, and if you can find somebody who's willing to do that, you can actually have those conversations. If you can't do that, it's just impossible to talk because it's just every second. It's just, why not just walk off set if you're talking to you know, a horrible person who's wrecking the country?
Right.
You may have perfect skin like Emily Jashinsky, but it's never too soon to start using GenuCell products for your skin. And it's the best line of skincare that we've ever used. And now that they have, we've basically tried every single product that they have because everything that we try is amazing.
It is awesome. And
right now, GenuCell is offering 60% off of their most popular packages, and you can get their hyaluronic acid serum thrown in for free when you buy a package. And here's the other cool thing that they're doing. A couple of folks wrote into us, a couple of our followers wrote into us and said, I've been using GenuCell and I love it. And they gave us they gave us all kinds of great testimony about their experience with GenuCell. And so GenuCell decided, you know what? If you read one of your followers' testimonials on the air, we're going to reward them with a free product from GenuCell.
That's awesome. So,
I know. And I have another one to share with you. This is amazing.
Cannot wait.
This one came from Kelly Carlson. And Kelly writes, Dearest Mock and Daisy, I was the recipient of the deep firming cream from GenuCell in the fabulous swag bag that y'all provided to all of us at Camp Tono. I was hoping for the dark spot corrector because my face looks like a Dalmatian. I have so many spots.
Oh my God.
Y'all, the instructions for the deep firming cream include adding the XV cream after application. I've used the XV cream from GenuCell for several years without any other product, and I love it with the deep firming cream even more. If it's possible, my skin feels even more silky. Here's the tip, and I thought this was so helpful. Kelly writes, don't forget your earlobes. I remember eons ago when I got my ears pierced the second time, mother told me, don't forget your earlobes when you use moisturizer. It keeps them supple as well. And we know the earrings pull, especially the heavy ones, keeps the lobes from stretching so badly as we age. I'm 61, she writes, but my earlobes look 40. So she says, keep up the wonderful work. And I just am positive that Genucel is going to want her to have that dark spot corrector to take care of her Dalmatian spots.
Oh my gosh. I love it. Her earlobes are 40. It's the greatest. Now I'm like totally self-conscious about my earlobes.
Same. Oh my God. Like, I am
oh my
too.
God. Oh
I didn't God. Even know to think about them. And now I'm going to be like, oh my God, did I get my earlobes?
Yeah. But I will say I have my grandfather, God rest his soul. He had the most gigantic earlobes. I think they get bigger as you age.
I think that's true. I think I've read that somewhere. That mm-hmm. and your nose and like your right. something else. I forget.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. can't wait to be like an old woman with these gigantic earlobes and a giant honker of a nose. It's going to be great. Okay.
Well, anyway, you should definitely check out Genucel.com/chicks. Get your 60% off of one of their packages. You're going to get the free hyaluronic acid serum thrown in. Genucel.com/chicks. Do you think that social media plays a role in that? Because I know you did a piece recently about just the negative side of social media. I mean, you have to wonder, because so much of the fighting takes place on it. When you see the Twitter fights and like all, you know, people are just looking for that quick insult, that quick gotcha. And then you dehumanize each other so easily when you're at a keyboard, right? So do you think that plays into people's inability to have those conversations?
Yeah, I think it totally does. And I think the science on that, the social science on that is increasingly clear, that these platforms are designed in ways that result in more division than unity. And that actually incentivize us to get into divisive conversations more than they connect us and make us united. And so I think they've really, really, really poisoned our politics. But and I think most people have come to understand that. But I think they've also poisoned the way that we interact with each other, because politics doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, as soon as you start thinking that somebody who doesn't share your beliefs on marriage or abortion or immigration is a bad person, that bleeds into everything else. And it bleeds into, you know, those conversations that you have at the bar or that you have at Thanksgiving or whatever it is. So I think social media, the way it's designed, it's essentially, they've actually borrowed tricks from casinos. Like when you're scrolling on TikTok, they hide the clock. That's what casinos do. They hide the clock when you're scrolling on TikTok. So you don't.
Oh, my God.
It makes it harder for you to keep track of how much time you've spent scrolling through videos. So, yeah. I mean, when you create a slot machine type program for us to talk about our personal lives and our political lives and even our professional lives, man, like it has been a very bad experiment. And it's not just staying to social media anymore. It's like it's all around us.
Yeah, we're being experimented on. What is the saying? Is like social media isn't social at all.
That's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great way to look
at it. It's just not. Yeah.
Okay, so I told you guys ahead of us starting this broadcast that I wanted to share a clip of you that from an appearance that you made on Media Buzz, I guess a week and a half, 2 weeks ago maybe now. And it was the context, because I'm not going to play the whole thing, but the context was that Lindsey Graham had made that comment about if Trump got indicted after all of the stuff at Mar-a-Lago, I think it was about the Mar-a-Lago thing, that it would cause riots, that people would riot and there would just be mass chaos. And everyone on the left pounced on that comment and made it sound and accused Lindsey Graham of inciting violence, which is so often the go-to, right? Like if someone says, listen, based on what we know, there's a lot of angry people who will be made even angrier if Trump is indicted, and therefore we have reason to be concerned that there would be backlash. That's a reasonable thing to say. I think that's what he tried to say. But of course, people pounced and were like, oh my God, he's calling for World War Z, essentially. So you were on, and I don't even know who this woman is. You can tell us her name if it is important.
I don't remember.
You don't remember? Okay.
I think I've been on with her a couple of times. She does a decent amount of Fox, like playing the Dem sort of strategist.
Right. Okay. Well, and that's exactly what she was doing. And so she says her thing about how, well, yes, I mean, there are people who are super, super mad, who are going to cause problems. And it's wrong of Lindsey Graham to say that out loud, apparently, because he's inciting violence. And so the host of the show breaks in to say, okay, so it sounds like you're agreeing with Lindsey Graham. You're admitting that, yes, there are people who are likely to get super upset. And then that's when things went crazy. And this is when I loved your face. And so I want you to, I'm just going to play this and then you can tell us about what you were thinking. Cause I love everything about this clip. Here it is.
I'm with what Lindsey Graham said. You're saying he's reflecting reality?
I have a huge problem with it because I think what he's doing is directing people by describing what he thinks is inevitable.
But he didn't ask anybody to do that or suggest anybody do that.
Yes, but I think we're smart enough to recognize the subtleties and that doesn't have to be explicit. It doesn't have to be explicit. You can do this by saying
he's condemned
this institution
January
is against
6th.
You.
He's always condemned violence in January 6th. There's literally no indication from Lindsey Graham that he thinks any violence should
be
happening.
So why did he
ever.
Say that?
Because it's a description of the fact that you yourself just said there's a sleeping giant and a latent threat of violence in this country, which I actually think is true. And I think it comes from rhetoric on both sides.
Perhaps, well, it's always both sides, right? But I think that the problem is...
Indeed.
Hold on.
That was my favorite part. When you were like, indeed. That was my favorite.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I texted my mom after that. Her name is Laura Fink. And she's actually, she's always been very courteous and kind off camera when I've been on with her. But I think I texted my mom immediately after that just to be like, did that come across okay? Because I realized maybe it was a... You know, you really shouldn't be sarcastic. That's one of the first tips they give you on TV.
This is why we're never on TV.
Sarcasm. Yeah. Because it doesn't always come across well. I think that was warranted.
Oh my God. Yeah. Of course it was warranted. That was just my absolute favorite. What was your take on Biden's 60 Minutes appearance the other night?
Yeah.
I mean, probably similar to you guys, just it makes me sad that he's the president of the United States. It makes me sad for the country. It makes me extremely sad for his family that they are so power hungry. They allow this to happen, that they thought it was a good idea for him to run for president, that they are supporting his run for president, although he did actually hedge on whether he would run again in that interview, which I think is great news for the country, frankly. And it's likely that if he goes away, we end up with Kamala Harris, who's much worse probably in many ways. But at the same time, it's just profoundly sad that the representative, the leader of the United States of America, the chief ambassador of the free world, is incapable of stringing basic sentences together and seems to be honestly barely holding on to coherence. I think that's, it just makes me sad. I don't know. I think it makes a lot of people sad probably.
Yeah. I mean, nobody in his family likes him, you know, it's this is what I've been saying for a while. It's he has a wife, you know, I mean, as somebody who is married and has been married for quite some time, you would think that his wife would be like, you know, I think we've had enough here, or just would have never done this to begin with to somebody that she supposedly loves. Cause it's mean. It's just really mean.
I've never understood that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and do you think, okay, so because you mentioned Kamala and, you know, she is sort of the obvious next in line sort of person, but Gavin Newsom is, you know, he's like knocking at that door. I mean, when he starts demanding that Governor DeSantis debate him apropos of nothing, then you know that that's what he's got his sights set on. So in a battle between the two of them, like, how do you think that would play out?
No, you're totally right. And I don't know that Gavin Newsom is totally on the radars of people here in DC, but he should be, because to your point, I mean, he's putting billboards up in, it's just like insane the extent that he's been trying to insert himself into the national conversation. So I think very clearly he probably is positioning himself, if Joe Biden decides not to run again, as the alternative to Kamala Harris. Although I think the incumbency, especially in a situation like that, would be hugely, hugely consequential for Kamala Harris if she wants to win a nomination. I think she would pretty much be coronated. I don't think it would be much of a competition. And Gavin Newsom is such a terrible, terrible candidate. Like, the only place he could win is California. I don't know how that man could win. And I mean, he can only win in deep blue enclaves because he's not even a talented politician from a purely sort of like Machiavellian standpoint. He's a terrible politician. He makes so many different mistakes in so many different ways that, you know, it's kind of unthinkable. But to your point, he looks like he's about to do it, which would be really fun because he's so bad. He's just so bad at it. The French laundry dinner. I mean, it's just like unbelievable. He'd have a lot of money though.
Yeah. But he can't be much worse than her though. I mean, she's terrible on her face too. I mean, Kamala is a complete and utter disaster. So that I look at both of them and I think, oh my God, like, can you imagine one of those two, like trying to run the country? I just can't. They're both awful. And then like whoever they decide, if they get the nomination, one of the two, and then they're running against somebody, whether it be a Trump or DeSantis or whoever it is on our side. I don't know. I don't think that they stand a chance. However, I don't, there's nothing surprises me at this point.
Right.
Yes. Right. It's so hard to make any political predictions now. It's unthinkable that Gavin Newsom, who's presided over disasters in many different areas in California, whether it's energy, whether it's fires, whether it's COVID, he has presided over all of these different total disasters and is corrupt, obviously. Very obviously corrupt, to think that he could run off of the job he's done in California, that he could sort of parlay that into any sort of successful attempt to run the entire country is insane. And I don't know who would be so dumb as to put money behind it. But I think a lot of people will. But it is a good question, though. I don't know. You guys probably have thoughts on this. It seems like there's so little distinction between Democrats anymore, period, that like Joe Biden, as bad as he is the last sort of bulwark where he will say, we're going to fund cops in the State of the Union address. And I can't imagine another Democrat saying that at this point. And it's like, he's like the last of the boomer Democrats that were willing to talk to the center, even for nakedly political purposes. And so anyone else after him, it's going to be pretty close to just having, a Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Well, we know that his in-laws aren't going to put money behind him.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
The greatest story ever.
We love it so much.
Very fantastic. I love that too. Mm-hmm. Well, before we let you go, one question, because I know we talked about this a lot on your podcast, and you were asking us about our feelings on Trump and the possibility of him running. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the possibility of a Trump 2.0? Or would you prefer to see him step aside and let somebody else sort of make a run at it?
Yeah, I'm in the camp where it's like there's no clear answer to me because I wish I did have a black and white feeling about it, because politics does seem to feel like it always needs to be black and white. For me, though, he's the classic double-edged sword, that all of the good things that Donald Trump does, I don't think are possible without the bad things. I don't think you get somebody who stands up for Kavanaugh. Like, I don't think any other president would have stood up for Brett Kavanaugh and refused to withdraw his nomination than Donald Trump, because he's so accustomed to being adversarial and hostile to the media. And I think Republicans after Trump would now be more willing to stand up for Kavanaugh. I don't know if they would, but they'd be willing to. But you don't get that without that part of Trump. You don't get someone going after CRT, and you don't get somebody taking on the media and calling out their lies without the Donald Trump that's tweeting about Mika Brzezinski's bad facelifts. You know, like, right. You can't have just one. And I do like what Ron DeSantis is doing. I, you know, like what some other folks are doing. I really like what Marco Rubio is doing. But I don't, at the same time, can they be sort of the wrecking ball that Washington needs? I don't know. I don't know if it's possible if you're also not the crazy truth social QAnon person.
Yeah. Right. Well, and then even if they could, can Trump even get there to do the things again? That's the question, right? Because, you know, there's a lot of people who think he's unelectable a second time around because of all the baggage and because of all the bad stuff that people have a sour taste in their mouth about or whatever. So, you know, because I'm somebody that would vote for him a third time. If he's the guy, then I'm going to the polls and I'm voting for him. I just don't know if I want him to be that guy, you know?
Well, and yeah. I'm also curious here in DC, I think sometimes there's an overcorrection in that people are in the Beltway and now they're more aware that they're out of touch with the rest of the country in some pretty important ways. And so people on the right, I wonder if they overcorrect sometimes and just say, Trump is unbeatable. He's so popular. People love him. And I think that's true. But I also do think even Republican voters get exhausted with Trump in different ways. And if there were an alternative that wasn't Jeb Bush or Chris Christie right. or something like that, people would be more willing to. It's possible there would be a split. So I don't know. I'm totally up in the air on where people stand. And I guess that's why we have primaries to kind of suss all of that out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And well, I think you represent a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I think you do.
Who just don't know, who are mm-hmm. just like, well, and the good news is that we've got 2 years to figure it out.
Yes.
So there's a little bit of time to play with.
Yes. Already 2 years. Oh my gosh.
I know.
It's mm-hmm. crazy to think it's still that far away. You guys, we are running out of time before the big giant sheet sale at mypillow.com/chicks goes away. And so you want to take advantage of it while you can, because right now their super soft, amazingly luxurious bed sheets are on mega sale. Just to give you an example, a queen size set, normally about $90, less than $40 right now when you use promo code chicks at mypillow.com/chicks.
Okay. So I'm putting my tree up. Like, I was going to do it October 1st, but I think I'm going to do it like sometime this week.
Oh my God.
I don't know why you're laughing.
It is September.
I don't know why you're laughing at me. I don't know what the big deal is. Okay. So listen, it makes me think I've started buying gifts for all of my family. My Pillow is like the perfect place to get gifts, you guys. You can get robes, you can get slippers, they have different kinds of slippers. They have like the flip-flops and stuff too. You can get travel pillows. Travel pillows are a really great gift. I mean, you can't fit them in a stocking, but you right. still like.
But you
still,
can. I think if you roll them up, you can actually do that.
Maybe you could. It depends on how big your stockings are. But then also, like regular pillows are great gifts. The sheets are great gifts. I mean, sheet sets are like a slam dunk if you have like a wedding, or if it's like a newly married couple, or if it's a single person. And you know, those people always have like crappy sheets.
You
know,
yeah,
they do. So getting them sheets because they don't buy stuff for themselves. So these are like great gift ideas. I mean, you can get everybody outfitted for Christmas at MyPillow. I'm just telling you right now, start buying now. If you buy now, you're going to be. You'll be done.
Everything
for Christmas
is such good quality too. Like you're, yes. Everybody is going to thank you.
Oh
I mean,
God.
That's the thing. Nothing we have ever gotten from My Pillow has been subpar. Everything is amazing.
It's the best.
You're going to see for yourself, mypillow.com/chicks and use code chicks to get buy one, get one offers on a whole bunch of stuff.
Do it.
Well, Emily Jashinsky, so glad to have you with us. Thank you so much for being with us. It was a delight as always, and we can't wait to talk to you again. It's always a great time.
No, thank you guys so much for having me. Thank you for joining Federalist Radio Hour. It was so much fun, and I really appreciate it.
Tell people where they can find you real quick if they want to hear more.
Yeah, sure. Federalist Radio Hour is around on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download, and I'm on Twitter at Emily Jashinsky.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.